time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
There's a line drive, base hit into right center field. In comes Gurriel. In comes Altuve. Here comes Alex Bregman. He's going to score. A bases-clearing double by Yordan Alvarez gives the Astros the lead in the ninth.
Three-run double in the ninth by Yordan Alvarez lifts the Astros to that win. Fourth win in a row before they head to KC tomorrow.
Sweep of the A's, who it's great to just see them be the absolute rock bottom mess that they are again. I got really annoyed when they and their television network were talking trash about the Astros. This was while I was in Seattle. I remembered seeing that, Vanessa, a couple of times, and specifically this one just terrible graphic. Like, what are they saying about us? And I got very, very, very happy to just see that the A's have just become an absolute mess. But it's funny. Every single Astros game is the same now. Starter throws almost no hitter. Offense, not ideal. So it was nice to have a little twist on this one to have the old Yordan Alvarez double to win that one. I mean, shoot, a come-from-behind victory in the ninth inning. You don't get to see that often, so it's exciting every now and then when it happens. A little spice on top of our Wednesday afternoon.
A little spicy Wednesday for hump day.
Well, after noon delight, yeah.
Yeah. Dusty Baker had said you have to have a couple of come from behind wins during the season. This was definitely one of those. Justin Verlander also took a no-hitter into the seventh. That was a nice bounce back, guys, if you remember his last start in Seattle wasn't great.
No, it was bad. And, you know, my ex-boo thing looked great in her teal, but I was saying the safe word, and they didn't stop. You know, it was mean. I wanted them to stop being as physical in that spot. It was nice to see him bounce back the way that he did. We all expected him to bounce back the way that he did. Isn't it weird, though, that we're just saying the same thing about the Astros every single day? I feel like the last 3 days, Vanessa, I've come in and I've been like, okay, I mean, they're 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position, but there were some opportunities that were left on the table the first couple of innings. The offense, not where I want it to be, and the pitching is fantastic. And I just started thinking to myself, like, what other things do I just enjoy watching over and over and over again, knowing that it's going to be the exact same thing every single time I watch it?
Movies or TV shows?
Either.
Okay, so we're going to let you guys ponder this for a minute. I do want to play sound of Justin Verlander. He talked about his reaction after the win, and again, after he had kind of that rough start in Seattle, how nice it was to have a good, solid start and a no-hitter through the beginning of the seventh.
Got a team that never gives up, and it was nice to see them come through. They're late, you know, better late than never, and you know, that's why we played 9 innings, and, you know, I think they did a good job holding our guys down for the majority of the game, but, you know, came through when it mattered, so that was a nice win.
There you go, JV, a nice win.
Even with my concerns over the Astros offense as a whole, at least just based off of what we've seen through nearly 2 actual months of baseball, I still feel that they will come back against teams that they are better than. And that is a nice thing to have in your back pocket. Oh, they're down 5 runs, or they're down 3 runs, or they're down whatever amount of runs, and it's the last inning. I'm still going to watch to see if something cool happens. And yeah, it was a nice way to spend a Wednesday afternoon.
It was. And like we said, some come-from-behind wins. Yordan Alvarez doing Yordan Alvarez things. But yes, I do think we're at the point in the season, Paul, to where any – you have to remember, like, June is the new July, right? So any concerns that you have now, I think, are officially valid because we are at the point – what's usually June since the season was delayed due to the lockout. So if you have concerns offensively – if you have concerns with your team and pitching, which clearly the Astros don't, I do think it's at a point where it's no longer, oh, it's the beginning of the season, or there wasn't a spring training. I think issues that you have and concerns with runners being left on bases consistently is a very valid thing.
Yes, it's the same thing.
Groundhog Day. Okay, so 713-780-ESPN. That's the text line. Of course, you can call us too. What is one thing that you guys feel like is, you know, safe to say like Groundhog Day, Bill Murray-ish, something you can watch over and over again? You brought this up. I like this topic.
So
I have a problem where I will just watch the same things over and over again. And I think other people are like this. But I am rewatching Breaking Bad for a, get this, 8th time.
There's no way.
I don't pay attention to it every single time. Sort of like with some baseball games. It's background noise and I'll pay attention to the critical moments. But I have watched Breaking Bad 7 times through. I have noticed something new every single time that I have watched it back. I just enjoy watching it over and over again. And if we're talking movies, there's two. There's, first off, Braveheart. I have watched that movie no less than 32 times. And I have also watched the movie Gladiator a good 20 times or so. And can I quote both of those movies at an alarming rate? Yes. Especially anything that involves Longshanks in Braveheart. But I like this. And it's interesting that while I do have these concerns with the Astros, it is somewhat peaceful knowing, yeah, it's going to go the safe way. Starting pitcher throws almost no hitter. Bats, quiet, but they will probably get just enough to win.
Somebody on the text Twitch line says Breaking Bad is so slow. I was never...
You're so slow.
You probably can't even pick it up. I need to watch it. Okay, so we know the answer for
you
me
don't
is,
get it. It's the best show ever, which is what everyone who has watched the show says. They're kind of insufferable about it, and I'll admit, I'm bad with that one. That's the one show where I'll say, you haven't watched that show? What's wrong with you?
I'm an office person.
Okay.
I am an office person. Now, I'm not the person that thinks that it's the only show that ever mattered. Seinfeld, you know, Cheers. I've seen all those as well. But I'm an office person, to your point. You can put it on in the background. And we all know the answer to my second one, which is Dateline. Technically not the same episode every time, but is it really that different? Usually the husband does it. Usually Keith Morrison is in his leather jacket saying, or did he?
I think Dateline's a lot closer to what the Astros have become because there is a little bit of variance that takes place, but you could watch any episode and you're like, okay, so someone's going to die. And as you said, I guess it's the husband that always does it, which is very sexist.
But it's true. Wedding Crashers is the movie that I can watch over and over and over again.
Wedding Crashers is your movie.
That one is my movie. Now, a lot
comedies.
Of people go Step Brothers with that or Caddyshack or, you know, some of the older people say Animal House.
Animal House is good.
Wedding Crashers is mine. Sean, what can you watch over and over again?
Any of the movies from this franchise, but specifically Fast Five. Fast and Furious Five is like crack cocaine to me. I love it.
Which one?
I also love, no, what?
Which Fast and Furious is that? Because they all started to blend together in a good way.
That's the one where they go to Brazil and they steal the money in the safe and drag it through Rio and kill a whole bunch of pedestrians, but for a good reason.
That's the funniest part about that. They're just, the safe is just going back and forth.
It takes out like an entire Chase Bank.
Never seen it.
And then they open it, and then The Rock, who's chasing Vin Diesel, opens it up. It's empty. They switch the safes halfway through the chase, and he just smiles. And he's like,
they got me.
Yeah.
We've gotten a lot of The Sopranos. Somebody else said Wedding Crashers. There you go. What about Bob? Solid movie.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've seen that.
I've only seen probably 75% of What About Bob. I did enjoy it, but I probably, with my small squirrel brain, I was distracted by something and I think I moved on to something else. The Fast and Furious ones are perfectly mindless enough so that you can basically watch any. One of my favorites, and I, as you guys know, I also have an unhealthy obsession with Nick Cage. Face Off is such a ridiculous movie. The melodramatic acting from Nick Cage.
Is that the one with the bad accent?
No, that's Con Air,
okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Where he put the bunny back in the box.
It was part of the greatest run in movie history, though, when Nick Cage did Con Air and did The Rock and also did Face Off within a 2 to 3
year stretch.
Boom, boom,
boom. Like 3 in a row.
I mean, Blockbuster City. How did he waste all of that money and go bankrupt? It's a great question. But it has to do with buying a Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton and a giant mausoleum in New Orleans. But Face Off with John Travolta's overacting and Nick Cage's overacting, plus John Woo randomly throwing doves into every single scene that he can. I love to rewatch that. Like, I like to see the same thing with the Astros over and over again.
And the part where Nick Cage goes, I'm going to take his face off. And then they just keep saying Face Off for like 5
So it's so bad, it's good.
No, it's so good, it's good. Wait, what was bad about what I just said?
Nothing.
I'm going to take his face
off.
Off. face off.
I saw a meme yesterday, and it says, there are two Nicolas Cages inside of you, but one of them is John Travolta.
Oh, wow.
Makes you think.
Yeah, it really, really does make you think.
I don't want John Travolta inside of me.
It's okay. Well, there's some rumors that that's what he'd like. It's Groundhog Day again. The Astros did win, of course. Great win for the Astros, and they continue on in KC. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Kalan, Scientology, am I right? The Texans have OTAs. We talk about the guys that did not attend, plus the match. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We're getting a lot of the movie Blow, mm-hmm. King of the Hill. A couple of those old gangster movies like the ones with Ray Liotta, etc., Goodfellas.
One texter said Lil Paul couldn't watch MTV over and over again, and I think that's assault. Don't remind me of my oppressed childhood where I wasn't allowed to watch Nickelodeon.
What
either.
Were you able to watch?
PBS.
Yeah, I couldn't watch a lot either. My parents were pretty early on.
WB I was able to sneak watch. Before I discovered South Park, I would sneak watch like Pokemon. From WB and all the other random anime shows that featured some version of small monsters that are slaves to children.
My parents found out I was watching Girls Next Door, the Hugh Hefner show.
Yeah.
They were not happy.
That we was don't banned. Want you to be this
I was,
when you
I was
grow
watching
up.
It at my Nana's house, and my Nana, who had Alzheimer's, would say, oh, those girls look so nice. all right, the Texans holding some OTAs yesterday. Laremy Tunsil did not attend. Neither did Titus Howard. Titus Howard had, I'd say, a pretty good excuse as Titus Howard Jr. was being born at the hospital. But no Laremy Tunsil. Lovie Smith did say something along the lines of, we pay attention to who's here and who's not. But he also emphasized that they are voluntary because technically they are voluntary.
Yeah. Hey, Laremy Tunsil, did you have a child? Did you have a dead relative or something like that? I mean,
I hope not.
I hope not either, but
RIP if so.
This is true. I would just say, again, bad look that he's not there. Titus Howard, congratulations. I just wonder, how do you best develop offensive line continuity with off seasons as limited as they are right now? This is the one, I guess, positional group that I actually think it means something if players aren't there. And it is voluntary, and it's funny how it's not voluntary in the eyes of coaches. They're not allowed to say that it's involuntary, but it isn't. It is not voluntary for, I would say, 75% to 80% of an NFL roster. It's the guys who are established veterans who are the ones that don't necessarily need to be there. I get it. Tunsil doesn't necessarily need to be there, but you just brought in a rookie offensive lineman who you're already penciling in as one of your starting guards. If you want to develop the kind of rapport that the 2011 Texans offensive line had, where it had, I believe, Eric Winston, Mike Brizell, you had Wade Smith, you had Dwayne Brown.
A lot of these guys are classified as quote-unquote Texans legends now, by the way.
That 2011 offensive line was Chris Myers in the middle. I can't believe I forgot Chris. Chris and I are buddies. That offensive line was the best in team history. Like, it's not debatable, and I think you could ask Arian Foster, too. I mean, 2011, 2012, the Texans were who they were largely due to the continuity they had in the offensive line. And now with off-seasons changed the way that they are because of the new CBA and all that stuff, these reps are actually valuable. And look, it's not like you're going up against guys and pushing them around or anything like that, but you may as well get all of the mental walking through down as best as you can. Because, you know, once this thing starts, generally the offensive line is behind as the regular season begins because of the lack of physical stuff that takes place during the offseason.
I think anytime you have a young team, especially a quarterback going into his second year, you're a franchise that Nick Caserio says isn't rebuilding but is building. Okay, whatever. You guys are pretty much rebuilding for all intents and purposes. I think you need most of your guys at OTAs. Laremy Tunsil, the thing that will always rub me the wrong way is not, to his credit, not only him, but the lack of knowledge that we got and that fans got as media members about that injury.
Yeah.
We're not entitled to know everything. I'm not saying that. But we still don't really know what happened to the point to where there haven't even been a lot of solid reports from the Diana Russinis and the Schefters of the world about what happened. So I think that if you're Laremy Tunsil, I think you need to be at OTAs, especially given the amount of money you're getting paid.
That's also on the Texans.
Totally. That's why I said it's not all him.
Right.
Totally.
It's one of those things where I would like a little bit of clarity. And it would be one thing if this team was good last year and he missed time and you felt great about where he's going to be when he comes back. But this is still a guy that the Texans overpaid for. You could blame that on Bill O'Brien. It's not Tunsil's fault that two first-round picks were traded to bring him here to Houston. But I just feel like when you're a team that sucks and has been bad over the last couple of seasons, that it means a lot for those key cornerstone players to be at functions like voluntary workouts.
There is an article on sportsmap.com that Cody Stutes from The Wheelhouse wrote that I think is really
good.
It's
at OTAs
basically
yesterday.
11 observations you need to know about from Texans' first June practice. Highly recommend that. All right, the match 2022 happened yesterday. Aaron Rodgers sinking a clutch putt. He and Tom Brady beat Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes. It was old versus young. The next generation versus this generation, although they're all kind of this generation, and Tom Brady is probably going to play till he's 60. But this was entertaining. This was good television. There were a lot of funny moments throughout the day between, again, old versus young. And just I do want to play this before we start because this is very funny. Patrick Mahomes roasting Josh Allen.
Josh's biggest fear.
Vegetables.
A coin toss.
Okay, this was funny to me because it's not wrong, and I think people were a little triggered by it.
The hullabaloo over this entire offseason where we got to do something. It can't be overtime, can't be determined by a coin toss. I was so annoyed by that. So, yeah, if the Bills lost because of a coin toss, I'll zag. I'll be the one who says, yeah, it was great. It was great that Buffalo lost due to a coin toss. Here's the thing that no one thinks about. Okay. In overtime, with the defense as gassed as it was, both teams were going to score touchdowns on that first possession. So you guarantee a team a possession in overtime. Okay, what happens when both of those teams score against an exhausted defense? Because that's what was going to happen. You're still going to go back to, oh, there's a coin toss. This is ridiculous. So
were you anti-change the rule?
Yeah, I was. It's fine.
Oh, you thought it was fine.
I think that the rule that needs to be changed is anything that makes it so that a defender's life is hell. I think that I think defenders have it difficult as it is. And now at the end of these games, they're exhausted going up against quarterbacks who can extend plays for 15 seconds. It feels like, I mean, what are they supposed to do against a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes? There's not really an answer there.
This was some fun golf. I don't know that it was as fun as it's been in the past. It was Peyton Manning at one point.
Right. And versus Brady. And then they brought in other people into it.
Yeah.
I got to say, Rodgers, the putt that I did see this live, the putt that Rodgers hit to win the thing was a pretty impressive putt. It was, I would say, probably from 30 to 40 feet away or so. And I also got a kick out of Tom Brady once again beating both Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen in a game that matters, because that's what you expect out of Tom Brady. But there weren't as many funny zingers coming from Tom Brady. Everyone else did a little bit better.
No, he kind of played it safe. You're right. He kind of played it safe. He did accidentally say the F word at the beginning of the broadcast, yeah, which I thought maybe might not have been accident. One other thing that we found out during the match, there's some sound on this that Josh Allen, I don't know if this classifies as bulimia, but it sounds kind of close.
Josh, is it true that you throw up before every game? And if so, will you do it today?
I do throw up before every game, and if I can, as long as I might take Aaron to the side and let him.
Can you throw up right now? That would be great for ratings.
No,
we
probably could.
No.
If I start thinking about it, I get a little queasy. So
seriously, after you throw up, do you eat again?
No, I don't eat game days.
Okay, so that's super weird. It's actually a little bit problematic.
Is he just dry heaving?
Yeah, I think he actually throws up.
I don't think it's problematic. I mean, have you never had a moment where you've, like, I've never had this happen before, but, I mean, in high school, I had teammates that would, like, one or two that would Yes, before a game, they would be so amped up, like they would just, they would yak.
So it's from nauseousness, though. It's not from wanting to lose weight.
No, it's just nerves, I think.
Nerves.
I remember the first game of my senior year in high school when I knew I was like, I was starting at everything. And we were playing against the Fort Meade. Well, I'm just saying, I was nervous.
District safety
program. I was shaking. I was shaking during the entire buildup to the game. Like it was just all adrenaline, and I was ready to go. And then like the game starts, and you're like, oh, you're fine.
Yeah.
But no, I think this is natural for a lot of players. It's weird. You know, you're getting ready for this game. Where you're gonna have the hell beaten out of you, and if that's his pregame ritual, then so be it. I suppose it is problematic in 2022.
Does it blow your mind that he doesn't eat game
blow,
day?
Yeah. Blowing.
He said he doesn't eat game day.
So it's dry heave.
Probably is dry heaving, but he said he doesn't eat
the night before. You generally eat the night before. You eat like a ton, big old pasta
Sean,
meal.
Sean, please chime in here.
What?
From one athlete to another, you normally eat.
Never said that. I just said, but that's what the trainers would tell you to do. Just like eat a big meal of pasta, big plate of pasta the night before. Yeah.
You think that they don't encourage them to eat like a breakfast or a lunch?
I think that you have to be careful with that because you might be, you know, all of a sudden you might have eaten something before the game and your stomach might be rumbling. You might feel a little more full. Like you got to be careful with it.
I'm actually not a breakfast person, so I really can't critique Josh Allen on this.
I like to eat breakfast, but sometimes I wake up too late because I love the snooze button a little bit more.
You do love the snooze button. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we do our little NFL countdown. Speaking of the match, some quarterback talk. But first, Paul's going to tell you about PIN.
I really love the Passive Investor Network, the PIN process, passiveinvestor.net. They got another bus tour coming up on June 18th where they walk you through the entire process of how you and your family can accrue wealth through real estate. How do they do it? Well, they look across the city of Houston for a spot that they think is going to be the next big thing neighborhood-wise. They do the prospecting for you, and then they walk you through a five-year plan personalized to whatever goal you might have. The PIN process. It's something that you can check out at passiveinvestor.net. And that bus tour, again, it's June 18th. You could go for free. Promo code ESPN is how you go. And they're going to take you all around town. They're going to show you what some of the houses that they will buy, that they will start to refurbish, look like when they first get them. And then they'll show you what it could look like 5 years later. There was one place I was shocked by it. They showed me some of the first places, and I'm like, no way. I'm thinking to myself, this is crazy. You're telling me this is going to be worth a great deal of money. Then they show me one of the finished products at the very end of it that's going for $300,000. And I'm sure that shack that it was before was nothing close to that. It's the PIN process, baby. Passiveinvestor.net, passiveinvestor.net.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, 98 days. We are counting this down every day until the NFL regular season. 2 days ago, obviously, it was 100, if you can do math. And we know this because we woke up to the NFL making a big deal out of it online, as they do in the offseason. So we are now at 98 days. And in honor of the
Robert
match.
Robert Mathis.
Which, yes. Love it. There
See,
you go.
We're going to try. I'm going to try impromptu, and I used Google this time, to think up a number of a player that was one of those numbers.
What a legend.
97 will be hard. Yeah. God, it was crazy the Colts had both
I know.
Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis. And then if they're a passing attack, that generally is going to have a two-touchdown lead on you.
It doesn't make me want to cry that they only won one Super Bowl. So that doesn't make me want to cry at all.
I had to deal with somebody else.
Yeah. In honor of that golf match. Brady and Rodgers beating Mahomes and Allen. We're going to do a little bit of quarterback talk today as we're 98 days out. Let's start with who currently holds the title belt for the best quarterback. And we want you guys' opinion, so make sure you tweet us at SportsNessa at Gallant Says.
Ooh, little prime
you
time.
You can call us, text us, 713-780-ESPN. Who holds the title for the best quarterback in the NFL?
Right now, I think you still have to say that it's Patrick Mahomes, but I am curious as to how quickly that'll change this year. I don't think that'll be the case at the end of the season. But if you're asking me to take any quarterback I mean, we saw what he was able to do in that game against Buffalo. I mean, there's less than 20 seconds left. He has the ball, and he's still able to drive Kansas City in range to take that thing to overtime. It's him. It has to be him.
I can't believe that we're disagreeing on this. I'm actually going to say Brady, and it pains me so much. Obviously, last year wasn't what he wanted it to be. I think that that's going to make him even more motivated this year. Look, do I think it could be his last year? Absolutely. That seat that Greg Olsen is going to hold for a year or two, God bless you, Greg, on Fox, will be Brady's whenever he wants it. But I do still think Brady is the GOAT. Sean, what do you think?
I think it is between Brady and Mahomes. And it is tough because they both kind of struggled last year. I mean, you know, if you're tracking this,
struggled
Mahomes,
compared to what Brady they usually
in the playoffs, I think, was for the second straight year. It was sort of like, whoa, this
kind
was
of touch and go, yeah.
Different than the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I get what you're saying. And with Mahomes, I mean, there was like a month long stretch where people were writing think pieces. What's wrong with the Chiefs? And
in October,
they still were fine. Yeah. They were in the AFC Championship game still.
Yeah, in October, we thought the league had figured them out. But yeah, they didn't. And so I still would lean Mahomes just because you can't really give it to Rodgers, because if you want to talk about not coming through in the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers was not very good. And then Allen, I mean, he literally got out-dueled by Mahomes. So I do think, despite him being figured out in October, I do think Mahomes might be the answer.
I will understand arguments for Allen because he's riding the highest. Like, the last you saw of him was, oh, he didn't get the ball.
He lost the coin toss.
Right. And with Mahomes, you're like, hey, what the hell was going on in that game against the Bengals? Because that was some of the bad habits that we saw from Kansas City in the middle of the year. But look, I think until we see definitively what Patrick Mahomes is without Tyreek Hill, I think you have to say, yeah, he's the guy. But I do think that I will probably be changing my mind as the season progresses, because I think that the title belt will be in somebody else's.
We have a call for a Jeff Driscoll on the Twitch line.
Jeff Driscoll.
Best quarterback slash tight end.
He's the most versatile Houston Texan player on the roster right now. And if you don't think he's going to be a big part of the Texans in 2022, I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, pick him up in fantasy.
He can play him at two positions, yeah.
Vanessa and Gallant, we're rolling along on a Thursday. Who currently holds the title belt for the best quarterback in the league? We've had a lot of Josh Allens as well. Love the show. It's Blake Bortles. Okay, guys.
Oh, my gosh. So, see, of course, this is what happens because we joke around
do. The problem is we're in Houston, okay? So the quarterback situation has been
bad?
Questionable.
Don't say touch. Nope. Good God. Vanessa.
I caught myself. Who will
we traded that guy, right?
He's gone.
He's gone. I'm just saying the topic of quarterback in Houston, I think, makes people feel some type of way. That's what I was saying.
Okay, I feel you.
Who will hold the title belt for best quarterback at the end of the year? So I'm going with Josh Allen. I think we see another stretch from Patrick Mahomes where he doesn't look like himself. I think Tom Brady ends up inching towards retirement. I think we're going to see good things from a young Justin Herbert and a young Joe Burrow. But I could easily see at the end of the season us saying, whether it's the Bills go to the Super Bowl and lose or they go to the Super Bowl and win, we say that the new king is Josh Allen.
It feels like everyone feels that way. And honestly, gun to my head, Vanessa, I would agree with you. But just for the sake of being different, okay, well, let's take a look at who we think could perhaps take another leap forward this season. And I know, Sean, I feel like you're gonna be picking him. I am intrigued by Justin Herbert, to the point where I feel like if there is someone who's going to make like a big leap in terms of what public perception is, because I still feel like Justin Herbert's that indie band that hasn't officially gone mainstream yet. I think it could
I'm
be
a
Herbert
fan,
but I'll take Allen just because I think Allen's the easy answer right now.
Yeah, I think Herbert has a chance to kind of be where Allen is now next year if things go right, where he's the guy coming into next year where we're loving him. But I think it is down to Allen and Burrow for me, where if Burrow puts together another one of these, I'm not saying goes to the Super Bowl again, but if he has a great year again with Jamar Chase, T. Higgins and them, and then can make some noise in the playoffs, I do think that, I mean, Burrow does have a legit title shot. I mean, he could win MVP for sure.
There's a part of me with Burrow where I just wonder, is Cincy going to be back in this spot next year? Because it felt like they had a lot of things go their way. I would say Ryan Tannehill puking himself in that game. I mean, Vegas made it pretty close.
They did get him three new offensive linemen. So they've worked really hard to protect him.
Clearly,
which is,
they prioritize that,
right.
and he needs protection.
But
and,
did they get some breaks along the way? Yeah.
Yeah. Their defense played really well last season, and defense is weird in the NFL. It's kind of like bullpens in baseball, where year to year it's hard to predict that a good defense will be the same good defense the next season, even if it has largely the same pieces on it. So that's what I wonder the most about with Cincy, is that was a defense that seemed to be misleadingly good. Who was that guy who was essentially an afterthought on them that I think he had, what, like 13 sacks or something like
Trey
that?
Trey Hendrickson?
Yeah, Trey Hendrickson, who comes in and, I mean, has a great season. Thanks for the assist on that one, Sean.
Professor.
I mean, that was one of those ones where you're like, wait, what? This guy has 14 sacks? That doesn't seem to make sense. Is that something that happens again? I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. Who holds the title belt for the best quarterback at the end of the year? We are 98
General
days
Mills, says another
away.
Texter.
Actually, okay, is that a bad nickname? I kind of like that nickname.
General Mills.
General Mills is not bad.
That is not bad. I like that more than Mills Mania.
What's the best General Mills cereal? That's the real question.
Because you have the cereal theme. But not all nicknames need to happen or be forced.
Honey Nut Cheerios. That's my go-to.
Peyton Manning never called the sheriff other than John Gruden.
I don't know,
didn't
though.
Didn't happen.
That's my favorite nickname because it was so ridiculous.
And because it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It happened a little bit in Denver. And yes, I know technically John Gruden called him that for the first time when he was in Indy. But I promise you, nobody in Indianapolis was like, the sheriff. We don't need to force nicknames.
If Gruden was still doing Monday Night Football, I mean, and he gave Peyton Manning the nickname of sheriff in 2022, would he be canceled for that? For being pro-police?
I was wondering where you were going with that. That actually probably might be a point that some people would make.
This is a problematic nickname. Peyton Manning needs to be out of the league now. The sheriff?
I just can't believe.
Unbelievable.
I think they put it on his statue outside of Lucas Oil, which was
well,
really
that means
sad.
It's official, then.
Did they put him in, like, a cowboy hat
no,
or something?
See,
or have
no.
a star on
if
his...
You, if it's a nickname, like, Big Ben isn't a bad nickname because Ben is big.
And his last name is horrendous to say.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Don't force nicknames. But General Mills, I don't know, guys. I kind of like it. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're doing something bold. We're trying something new.
Oh, yeah. We're experimenting.
It is our first real gambling segment.
Right.
That's coming up next.
We know so much about it.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It'd actually be, for me, I forgot what year it was that LeBron beat us in Game 7.
18.
So 18 was probably that for us. We definitely thought that we had a great chance. And to this day, we still thought if we went to the championship instead of LeBron and those guys, we definitely would have beat Golden State that year. Wow.
A lot of confidence from Marcus Smart on JJ Redick's podcast, saying that he thinks that the Celtics would have beaten the Warriors back in 2018. Our resident Celtics fan, a.k.a. Pauly G.
I love Marcus Smart, but my God, the guy is so irrationally confident sometimes. You know, if they were to say going into this series, they feel confident in their ability to beat Golden State, fine. Especially if Marcus Smart, I don't know, collides with Steph Curry and has him injured for a couple of weeks like we saw towards the end of this past season. But this is what drives anyone who was a Celtics fan crazy about Marcus Smart. They had no chance against that 2018 team. Oh, the one with Kevin Durant? Oh, the one that we saw do what they did to the Houston Rockets? Can we stop? Can we stop with this? Can we stop with this idea that, yeah, we're going to win? I mean, I don't think they would have beaten the Rockets that year, the Celtics. I thought that whoever won the Western Conference Finals that season was definitely going to win the championship. There was no debate from me on that. And Boston thinking like that went in the Mickey Mouse East that year, that they were going to be able to beat Golden State is crazy talk.
When we look back on Steph Curry's career after he retires and Klay Thompson and all that, do we consider that team, the 2018 and that era, kind of the vintage Warriors team?
It's definitely a different vibe. Like, who liked the Golden State Warriors then?
Right.
Where now they have, in the eyes of some, and I don't think a lot of people here feel that way, but in the eyes of some, they're cool again because they were terrible for a couple of seasons. I mean, they had the worst record in basketball.
But that's what I'm saying, is that we're not talking about the Warriors the last couple of years. We're talking about what we will refer to as one of the greatest era right. Warriors, and Marcus Smart is saying that they would have beaten them.
It's nuts. But again, it's on brand for Marcus Smart, so I suppose I can't dump on him for that. There's a couple of ways to look at the series. On one hand, you could say, well, Boston was just taken to seven by a really tough Miami Heat team, and they had no business being taken to seven by that team, and they almost blew that game 7-2 despite having a 13-point lead with 3 or so minutes left. You could look at it from that perspective, or you could say, hey, Boston, if you take a look at the best players in this series, how many of the first 5 players would you pick in a draft that are from Boston or from Golden State? Because I feel like Steph Curry is definitively the only one that would be taken in the top 5 for this Golden State team. I think you would take Jason Tatum, you would take Jaylen Brown, you would take Marcus Smart. Do you take Al Horford with the way he's playing over Draymond Green right now? I think the best players for Boston are better than the best players for Golden State in totality right now. It's just, is Jason Tatum going to have a lot of his no-shows like you've seen from time to time in the playoffs? He has been very inconsistent in terms of his presence being felt.
Celtics versus Warriors, game one of the NBA Finals tonight, and since it is game one, we are going to talk a little bit about gambling.
Which we have never done before.
No, this is our first gambling segment. Woo! We're excited for this.
We're experimenting, but it might be one of those things that we look back on, we're like, that was a mistake.
Well, gambling is huge right now. It can't be denied. It's growing, it's growing, it's growing. The leagues are starting to get behind it.
So maybe we're bandwagoning.
Maybe the state of Texas at some point we'll get behind it.
Should be now. I mean, like, just, hey.
It should have happened a while back.
Yeah, tax, you know, free tax money based off of sin and vice. We're too good for that? Okay.
Yeah, Paul, the political rant from Paul Gallant. Gotta love it. But with all seriousness, it is huge. The teams, you heard the Houston Astros announce a partnership with, I think it's BetMGM, and other leagues, of course, announcing those partnerships as well. So, as J.J. Redick said on ESPN this morning, he's taking the under for almost every over-under option because these are two really solid defensive teams. Actually, the Celtics and the Warriors, probably the best defensive teams in all of the NBA. So it's fair to say that there are going to be a lot of unders. But let's talk about the odds to win the finals.
Ooh.
Warriors at minus 154. Celtics at plus 130.
Which is so funny. So I feel like since we barely know what the hell this means, that we should explain it to everybody else as if they're dummies. I like that there's this one website that said, like, minus 154 means that if you were to bet $10 on the Warriors, you'd win $16.49, which is so specific. I never understand why people would bet on a team to win something where they're not going to make the full amount of money that they put down on. Like, I don't understand the point.
Well, the minus means that they're automatic, that they're the favorite.
Right. See, we're learning things on the fly. In the Celtics, you would bet $10 to win $23. But I would say this, and this is from conversations I've had with the Falcon, Fred Fowler. It's basically, if you're picking on win losses, like, you're generally setting yourself up for failure, especially if they involve some sort of a spread. But, and this would be the same way. I don't think the payoff is good enough for either of these two to, like, decide to put a couple of bucks down. Because I like to play long odds, low risk.
They're close enough to these teams, again, defensively, to where there's no overwhelming amount of money, it seems like, that will make you pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're close enough to where it's not like a stretch. You don't feel like anything's a stretch. Odds to win MVP. This was on Fox Bet Live. Steph Curry is at plus 100.
What's the point? Like, that's not even fun.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's, I, okay, if you want to go do that, great. I looked further down the list. So the ones that are fun as far as odds to win MVP.
Like Andrew Wiggins plus 4,000.
Right, because Curry's plus 100, Tatum's plus 175, blah, blah, blah. No, when Jordan Poole plus 2,500 or Marcus Smart at plus 4,000, Smart's the play. Smart takes so many shots because the guy thinks he's amazing. And if he shuts down Steph Curry and if he scores a bunch of points offensively, I mean, that's obviously the guy to go with in this. You know, you're generally never going to have a finals MVP that is completely unknown. You know, like with Andre Iguodala when he won the finals MVP, like that I remember was the, like, I guess lowest on the totem pole that I think we had gone with a player winning the finals MVP that in recent memory. But, you know, Marcus Smart and Jordan Poole, I would say, are on where Iguodala's level is at that point in time. So, yeah, I'm taking Marcus Smart plus 4,000. Let's go.
If he stops shooting, you're comfortable taking Marcus Smart.
If he hits the shots, then he's going to win it. That's what I mean. Like, I don't want him to take any of the shots. I'm talking about this strictly from a gambling perspective.
There's really no fun in taking Steph Curry. There's not a lot of fun in taking Jason Tatum. So you know what? I'm going to go plus 1,400. I'm going to do a little Draymond Green before he launches the final stage of his playing career and goes to a full-time media career. I'm going Draymond
Green. If he gets ejected for kicking someone in the nuts or punching someone in the nuts, he should still be MVP because he was the MVP in, what was it, the 16 finals between the Warriors and the Cavs because he got ejected for punching LeBron in the nads.
713-780-ESPN, of course. We want to know what you guys, are you betting on tonight's
LeBron
game one of
him.
The NBA Finals? What are your thoughts, et cetera? Okay, point spread, Warriors minus four. Then the money line is the Warriors minus 175. Celtics
ooh,
plus
the money line. I don't even know what that means. The money line.
Somebody call and explain money line to Paul.
No, don't. This is where the gambling experts like us. Like, I can't be bothered to know about the money line, you know?
We are true experts.
You know, the I have no idea what that means. No clue. Is that just straight up?
Professional.
I can explain to you in, like, four words.
Four words.
It's who's going to win.
Oh! Why don't they just say who's going to win? That's stupid. I hate, you know what? There's a couple of commenters on the Twitch that are like, anyone could do this gambling thing. Yes, I legitimately do agree. Like, you want to have a little expertise with it, but this is the whole point of it. Anyone can do it. The people that, like, do it professionally, sorry, like Hammer and Hank that used to be on ESPN all the time, and some of these other people who take themselves so seriously.
And by the way, they usually only end up winning about 56%.
Right, exactly.
So they barely make over.
And they watch games like they're Keanu Reeves in Hardball, where they're like throwing chairs at a television because the Bulls beat the Knicks by 7 points instead of the necessary 10.
So explain to us, Sean, Warriors minus 175.
Oh,
for the money line.
It just means they're the favorites in game one. Oh. It's not
$10 to win 1571, guys.
Yes, thank you, Paul the Calculator, for that one. That's mainly that they're home court. That's basically what it is. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, everything is a pretty even.
For this match.
Yeah, this matchup, this game, this series, it just depends on who has home court. Even though that the Warriors or the Celtics just finished a series where the home team had a losing record in all the games.
Okay. Professor Mapes comes through again. The final gambling element, guys, total scoring over under 211.5 points scored by both teams combined. I'm going to take the under just because these are two top defensive teams, like we said at the beginning of the segment. I'm taking the under
I'm taking the way under.
What about you, Sean?
I kind of like the over for the first few games of the series because as the series moves on, you kind of see, they get more worn down, the players. And then you just know all the stuff the opponent's running. So this is the game where, you know, if there's a big third quarter from the Warriors, this one could be over, you know, relatively in the second half. And then it's kind of garbage time.
We
love garbage time.
Neither team is going to score any points. It's going to be a 40-42 final score in game one. You're just crazy, Sean.
Marcus Smart scores 38 of those 42 points.
I'm
going to be a great shooter.
I'm the gambling expert, and the money line is where it's at. You know,
You need to dress like Adam Sandler from Uncut Gems
for the next time
we do this series. And just, this is how I win. That's all you said.
Okay, so also, text in 713-780-3776. Should we ever do this again? 713-780-3776.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Miles Garrett speaks about both Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield. That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.